I wanted to start with some news at IU Kokomo. Hear about a new leadership change, although the interim chancellor, now President McRobbie, has named her as chancellor, I believe, Susan Gasecki.
Yeah.
Is this good news for Kokomo as well?
It's great news for Kokomo. Sue has a long history here, has been at the campus for a long time, has worked her way up, and has been involved in the community for years, serving on various boards and committees, not-for-profits. And so her leadership skills in the community obviously will only help the campus itself, and it gives us, the concern was as they were going through the process, we really, I think, are at a critical time in our community for, we need to keep our momentum going, and I think she's able to do that. So I think they've made the perfect selection, and I can speak not only for myself, but a lot of, if not every, community leader.
What will be some of her biggest challenges?
Well, she serves on our Economic Development Board, so beyond her responsibilities at the campus, she has really been working on making the campus a huge part of the community in so many different ways. We've cooperated on a new gym for Indiana University Kokomo Athletics. She's been at the forefront of recruitment of regional athletes in the Midwest to come to the campus, and obviously adding various programs. So beyond just those things at the campus, she also is involved in our economic development issues, and as I said, serves on a couple of the not-for-profit boards.
Well, there are about 4,000 students that go to IU Kokomo, so yeah, it is seen. Kokomo does see it as an economic development tool.
Yeah.
Town-gown relationship, has that always been decent in your mind?
I think it's been okay, but I think she has, in the last few years, really taken it to the next level, and I would say they're more involved in the community, and she is more involved in the community than ever before with the chancellor. So I think it will only continue to grow and prosper, those relationships, and obviously that will be good for the campus and for the community.
You began a new emergency alert system, went online maybe a few weeks ago. Can you tell us a little bit about it and how the enrollment's going?
Yeah, well, now that was actually instituted by Howard County government,
but
we've been very supportive. We sent a letter of support. Howard County has never had tornado sirens. And so a few years ago, we partnered with Best Buy, and we offer tornado or weather radios at a very deep discount. And now when you add in that and the new communication system that is set up by county government, we think those are the communication devices of the future. They're the communication devices of the present. And so we're very excited that this really only helps make our community safer. They'll be able to push one button, send one message, could be directed to one part of the city or one part of the county or one neighborhood, not just for tornadoes, but for any type of flooding, emergency alerts, and it will go right to everyone's cell phone, landline, business phone, whatever numbers are put into the system, and can be targeted for specific neighborhoods or to the public in general.
I believe last week we had severe weather preparedness week, a couple of tornado drills, statewide tornado drills, but that system didn't go off. But on the same token, from what I understand, it wasn't supposed to go off. Is
right.
That right?
That's exactly right. They are just in the process of getting it up and running, and for that very reason, they did not issue the typical warning that was done throughout the state.
The legislative session finally wrapped up. Anything that sticks out to you in terms of maybe your biggest disappointment or your biggest, what you think, success that they've done this session?
Most of it I would have to put in the disappointment category. I think the business personal property tax issue, I think the Indiana Association of Counties, the school superintendents, Indiana Association of Cities and Towns, and other groups did a good job And I think the press did a great job throughout the state of explaining this in much more detail than some people probably would have liked to have been done. And so I think people understood that the average citizen, average Hoosier here in the state, really knew that this business personal property tax cut that was being proposed was going to benefit a few large, extremely large multinational corporations, and those shifts would go back to local property owners and small businesses and small farmers. And so there was a really good coalition that reduced the impact on local communities and really helped stop that as much as we could do. What did pass, the pieces that did pass, our association and I don't support, and that was the competitiveness now to, we'll go county by county to determine some of these tax breaks. You know, try to work on regional collaboration and cooperation and pitting county versus county on how this, which tax cuts will take place. We don't think that's a good idea. And then we're also able, under the abatement process that's now in place, we're able to use our own discretion to decide if we want to offer abatements. So if we see an economic development deal that comes in front of us and we don't think it's worthy the amount of investment or the jobs created or the wages that are paid through those jobs are not worthy of an abatement, we're able to stop that. And the system that they're trying to put in would be across the board, whether it was a good economic development deal or a bad deal. So
there was flood mitigation, flood bill that helps fund some of the premiums for people who have to have flood insurance. And I know this has been an issue, and there's a long-term plan for flooding. Have you had a chance to see that? And does that help people in Howard County at all?
I don't know that it does. I am aware of the legislation, not sure of all the specifics. I follow this nationally too, because it's being debated on the coast, and should there be federal subsidies for people that live in flood prone areas, and it's always interesting, in some ways the argument is always, people build in these on the coast and in these high dollar homes, and then it's subsidized through federal taxes, and so it tends to benefit some wealthy developers and property owners. And I know that's the national argument. How what legislation they passed here at the state, really not sure if that's in that same breath or not.
Maybe a quick update on the flood mitigation, because here you've been, or the city, the county has been buying up land.
Yeah.
That's part of the
part of our long term. Well, we're in the process, and we've had begun this over a year ago, about a year and a half ago, of looking at a long term flood mitigation plan. Because 10 years ago, or almost 11 years ago, we had what was be considered a 50-year flood, and then just last year we had what would be considered a 100-year flood, 1 in 100 chance of having a flood of this magnitude. And so we've been buying up property. We are looking at how we can really resolve this issue substantially. And we're not talking about just making it where it has a less impact, but where it's almost completely resolved, and finding part of it will be some revamping of the current waterways, the Wildcat Creek. Making some corrections there, as well as finding some areas, which is in conjunction with buying some of the properties that we have, to find a detention area where when the creek would overflow, it would go into these areas that are undeveloped, as opposed to some of the areas that were impacted last time. So we think we'll be able to get some of that started this year, and it's probably going to be a 2 to 3 year plan to get this in.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. What is there anything happening today, right now, in that plan?
Yeah, nothing.
Substantial.
Just the really looking at the floodplain areas and the areas surrounding it, and all of it right now is the engineering aspect, but no construction or earth moving going on at this point.
there have been many side effects from all the snow, and one I didn't even think about until I came across your Twitter account was, were people still waiting for Christmas tree pickup? What else have we missed?
Well, I'll tell you, in Kokomo, we missed a little bit of our fall leaf collection. The tornadoes that hit us were in the second week of November. We were finishing that up. And then when the tornadoes came, we were not able to finish up some of the neighborhoods on our fall leaf collection. And within a week after that, as we're trying to do the immediate cleanup of the tornado, we had a lot of the we had heavy snowfall and cold weather, and it's been pretty tough up here in this part of the state. And so we are just now getting to finishing out those last few neighborhoods on the fall leaf collection. So it's went beyond Christmas trees. It's back to last fall's leaves. So.
And how many potholes have you guys filled in so far?
Thousands.
I think I saw number somewhere that kind of blew my mind.
Yeah. We've had some days we'll have as many as three crews out filling potholes. And to put things into perspective, Indianapolis had, I think, their third most amount of snowfall on record in Marion County, Indianapolis. And we had about 14 inches more snow than they had in Indianapolis, so it was a record year, unfortunately, here in Howard County.
To keep up with the weather theme, I do see some good news as well, that you helped reopen a grand opening for the JCPenney here in Kokomo that was, I would gather, severely damaged during the November tornadoes.
Yes.
Good news.
And if you know your way through Kokomo, Hoffer Street near the 931 highway. That area was, it's a business corridor, and there was a lot of damage back in the fall when the tornadoes hit. So we've had a couple. Key Bank reopened about a month ago. JCPenney just here in the last week. Substantial damage to their store, but they reinvested and reopened. And then if you go along there now, you'll see various construction projects finally underway. I think a lot of the businesses were wanted to get some work done over the winter, but it's just been a little too harsh.
Are you still hearing from any residents that are needing help in rebuilding?
We still have some residents that are dealing with their insurance companies and have not quite reached a final settlement. And we're trying to be as patient as we can. And if we can help facilitate that to reach some sort of resolution, we want to do so. We want everyone back as much as they can, back to some sort of normalcy in their lives.
It's fun to come here a month later and see the progress of the parking garage right next door. How's the progress coming along?
It's going up very quickly. It's interesting. The Kokomo has no parking garages. This is something we've talked about for a few years. Going up, it will have 400 spaces, 100 on each level, and then 33 apartments, private development above that. And so I think they're looking at having it completed by the end of June. So that at least the parking element and then the housing can begin sometime in that time frame, and maybe by the end of the year have it completed. And we have quite a few projects going on in our urban area, and some of them are reconstruction and redevelopments, and then others are new projects such as the parking garage. We it's the last remaining historic depot here in the city, has been in service and still is up until the transaction's final. Used mainly as just a small office, one employee working in there, and then they used it for storage. We want to rehabilitate this and preserve this depot. There's going to be some investments made. Our trail will run right beside it, just to the east, but adjacent to the property. We'll have that part completed this year. The bids have already went out and been accepted. So here in the next month, that project will be underway. So it's in a strategic location. It's a beautiful building. Hasn't been taken care of like we would have liked. But we're going to refurbish it, at least begin with the city, and we'll consider what the final usage will be. But we just want to make sure it's preserved for the future.
And where did the funding come from for that?
We're using edit funds. We were able to purchase the building itself, which we think is a great deal, for about $45,000, and then we'll work on a way to get it refurbished. Don't have an exact plan of what the final use will be, but we'll make sure it's taken care of. In the last few weeks, we were recognized by CNN Money as the number one most affordable housing city in the entire country. We were in a good group of other cities, Davenport, Iowa, Bay City, Michigan, Lima, Ohio, Fairbanks, Alaska. So there was, it was a nice group of mid-sized cities, and the criteria is basically the we have a large percentage of people who can purchase a medium priced home here in our community. So it's a good value. There were some comments made by Mike Hicks, who is an economist and professor at Ball State University, that that in his mind, with the quality of life investments that have been made in the last 3 or 4 years, that Kokomo is probably one of the best investments in property that you could make in the state. And it was nice to get the confirmation from someone of his caliber.
Has affordable low-income housing been something that's been part of your agenda here?
It is. It's all part of it. It's low-income. We want to make sure we have low-income. We obviously have market-rate housing that a lot of people have access to. And then, Kokomo has, like many Midwestern cities, we have some affluent suburban neighborhoods as well. But we want to make sure that that most of the people in our community have access to a nice home. And so, yeah, we've worked on streetscapes and we've planted over 1,000 trees in the last couple of years and strategically placed those and to help property values as well. So we've been focusing on those, some of the areas that maybe need a little TLC, as we say, and bringing them up also.